But if you can't enjoy this weekend, what are you watching for? We're not going to win the cup. Rami's not going to win the cup.
No, absolutely not. And I agree with everything
you said. This is as good as it gets. Just fucking love it.
This is as good as it gets, mate. The Brumbies beating the Hurricanes in Canberra to knock them off an undefeated run. It's not getting any better than that this season. Enjoy it, mate.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of the Rugby Report Card. With me this week is Jim and Blake to review round 10 and what a weekend it was.
Is it round 10
also? We'll chat about a few key things.
They grow up so fast, man.
They grow up so fast.
Talking of a team that maybe didn't grow up fast is the Rebels. Have they hit their peak already after round 9? And is round 10 the start of the downward spiral for the Melbourne Rebels? Jim, what do you reckon?
Well, we talked about how hard it was going to be on the road. A Rebels team that has travelled okay, but across their years has not travelled okay. So this is much worse than I reckon we all would have anticipated. This was a pretty poor performance to be held to zero on any given day is, a sack worthy offense. But yeah, look, fuck, not good. Not good, is it?
No, I don't think that it isn't great. And I think we're going to talk about the games individually, but be remiss of me to say Blake is with us this week as well.
Oh, thanks, Richard. I didn't think we were going to get there, but we got there.
Sorry, man. I was just distracted.
Who cares? 39-0. Couldn't give a shit. The Junkyard Dog boys. The Junkyard Dog. That is the story of this weekend. It was an incredible weekend of Super Rugby. It really was a line in the sand moment that Australian rugby was not going to concede. We were going to fight. And the Brumbies delivered in spades. The Reds led by the Junkyard Dog, because big dogs got to eat, baby. That's the story of the weekend. It was an incredible weekend. I am frothing this competition. It just keeps delivering exciting moments after exciting moments. I mean, Reds v. Blues, game of the season so far. You can't top it. That was an outstanding 2 hours of entertainment. And as far as 7-6 goes, that's as fun as that can look too. I thought the Force were pretty sharp as well. A spectacular weekend of rugby, boys. Forget the Rebels. They're cut. $9 million in debt. They're fucked anyway. Let's enjoy the Junkyard Dog.
Hey, Jim, as a lover of sports in general, I know you understand the differences between win and losses. Are you surprised by Blake's spritefulness after a 1-5 weekend of Aussie teams versus New Zealand teams?
It's the takeaways, is it not? I mean, results matter end of the day, but they don't matter right now because everyone...
Are they not? Are we really at that stage? Are we really
making the playoffs in this comp? The Rebels are still in it. They're in for a fighting chance.
So the title of this week's podcast is the results don't matter anymore in elite sport.
I just think, I don't know what this attitude you bring in, Richard. I think we sat on here last week and every single one of us tipped zero Australian teams. It was going to be the toughest weekend that they could have played. The Brumbies knocked off an undefeated side in Canberra. Comfortably. Pumped them. The Highlanders and the Force could have won that. You're talking one penalty here, one penalty there, different game. Reds arguably did, mate. Like it was just a last second bottle. That was an incredible game. I think putting your realist hat on for a second, that's as good as we were hoping for a week ago. And I think you'll take it. We all sat in here thinking Brumbies were done, Reds were done. Our only hope was the Crusaders are that bad. And then when that didn't turn out to be true, you sat there thinking, oh, Jesus, this is the weekend. The Kiwi teams have worked into the season. This is the weekend where the wheels fall off and we're cooked. There's no local games. No one's going to win. The fact that we showed up on Saturday, if you can't get around that right now as an Australian rugby fan, there's not much else to get around. I mean, the Super W are pretty awesome.
What you're celebrating is, oh, it's worth tuning in again because they're close games, some of them. 2 of 5, 3 of 5, close games.
3 of 5.
It's worth tuning in again. But my standards, they're still high. My expectations is to win. Do you think, sitting there right now, that the Reds are a chance of winning this thing? Yes or no?
The whole competition.
Whole competition is what we're talking about. That's what matters, man. It's what matters.
Hmm. But if you can't enjoy this weekend, what are you watching for? We're not going to win the cup. Brumbies no, aren't winning the cup.
No, absolutely not. And I agree with everything
you said. This is as good as it gets. Just fucking love it.
This is as good as it gets, mate. The Brumbies beating the Hurricanes in Canberra to knock them off an undefeated run. It's not getting any better than that this season. Enjoy it, mate.
And that's what's wrong with the model, because there's no belief anywhere. You won't find it here. We just heard it. I agree with you. There's no belief that anyone can actually follow through with their shot.
Oh, I just don't know how we turn this into a negative spin on Australian rugby when the Brumbies have knocked off the Canes, Junkyard Dog,
one
and Dave
five, the, mate. That's how. One
fed himself
five.
Some charm. I just
six, mate.
I don't know how we've managed to draw out the
because it's fun to poke the bear and poke two
yeah,
of
you.
You
are biting.
It's fun. Look, I think you're absolutely right. There were so many good elements to it. And by the way, I don't think the Reds will win the competition, as I just mentioned, but I think it's much more likely. Again, I want to make the point, I don't think they will, but the competition is a lot closer than what it has been in previous years. You know, on any given day, there is a time now where one team might stand up and might get the calls. And due to the subjective nature of rugby, it might mean that they nick a win. So there is a much more likelihood that there potentially could be an Australian team in the final, where there's never been in the last few years. It's not been the case. We even saw the Brumbies last year when they were in second and then they went to fourth and they just fell away. Whereas due to the closeness of the games, you never know this year, but yeah, it is an opportunity to celebrate. And I think it'd be remiss of us not to talk about the big picture as a whole this year. You know, a lot of the teams have made progress and the records are not reflective of where we're at. Even the Waratahs, you know, as a Waratahs fan, their record sucks and stinks, so they should be doing better. But if you look at it half glass full, they've got a pack that's starting to come together. They've got a couple of players who are working into it. Marky Mark look better.
I think what you're saying there is the name of the game. If it's not winning, it's about improvement. And they have they not? They had a bit of a slump. But you look at some of the changes that have sparked this improvement. There's no McDermott running around. Like some of their key force, I can't remember who the other cat is who got suspended, but another big name is just not there leading the pack, and they've played some of their best rugby this year without them. What does that tell?
How do we draw a bow on this? Because we're jumping around teams. I think it was a spectacular week. Do we want to review the games, or do we want to give a mid-year semester one report for the Australian rugby sides and try and synthesize some sort of judgment out of their performances, because they have been really topsy-turvy. I would say all of them have been topsy-turvy. There's no linear.
I think it'd be good to, I like the idea of giving a semester one report. I know we're 2/3 of the way through, because I think it's a good opportunity to obviously draw conclusions from all the information we have. And I think to your point, Jim, it's not a bat, you know, yes, it's 1-5 this weekend, but there has progress been made. So let's start off at the top, the Rebels. You know, in terms of what would you say, Blake, is the grade that you would give them for their season? We were jumping off their, swinging off their what's-its last week or a couple of weeks ago, and now they've just been held to zero. So where are they at?
We need to be clear. Are we grading against our expectation, or is the rubric that an A is an outstanding top side that's topping the competition and is perceived to win it? A B is a team that will have a home final, is more likely than not to win their home games. A C is a team that will occasionally win at home, mostly lose away. D is a team that if they get a win, fucking how good. And an E is thanks for showing up.
There's a few contributing factors.
But are they all on that scale, or are the Rebels on a fuck? I thought they were going to fold.
Nah, it's winnability. So A, their ability to win. Two, and this is where I should factor it in, is what they've offered the fan this year. Whether or not it's a close game, a winnable performance, or something in the realms of tuning into them playing and being a worthwhile watch, they've offered something. And that
right, but are we measuring them against the same or against what we expected them to do?
Or I would say what we expect them to do. I think because otherwise no.
But the Rebels ready. Could be theoretically above the Brumbies.
Absolutely.
Theoretically. If that's the way you want to go, mate,
yes.
Go that way.
If that's I'm the way go you that way. Do it. I'll go that way. The Rebels are confusing then, because if you wanted me to objectively do it against set criteria, I'd have them quite low, I think. But I actually think For what it's worth, they have far exceeded what I had expected of them, and even individual players have played better than I expected. I actually think the Rebels, going into this season, knowing that their squad was pretty light on, not light on in terms of size, they got some fucking big boppers, light on in terms of continuity, retaining players, having good outside backs. I really thought the Rebels were going to have a struggling season. Add on top of that, they announced that they're going broke. They're suing Australian rugby, and no one's ever turned up to a game in Melbourne. I think we all expected the wheels to fall off. And if they had won one game at this point in the season and retained any players, it would have been a miracle. So the fact that they were in the top four a week ago, I would say a loss in Christchurch away from home doesn't change that much of my perception of them. I know it's a different Crusaders this year, but, you know, a loss in Christchurch, I've never seen anyone win. So I don't know. I actually think on what I expected from the Rebels, I'd give them a B minus, maybe even a straight B. If I was objectively, you know, how likely are they to win the competition? I'm going to have an E, guys. But I think given everything we've said about them, I've got the Rebels on a B to a B minus. In terms of spectating, quite enjoy Carter Gordon as a 10, runs to the line, throws a flat ball. Kellaway's one of his best seasons. And I love the forward run on that their forwards get. But I think we said it early, and I stand by it, that they're an under-16s team, flat track bullies. If they're winning, they look like superstars. If they're losing, they look like a bunch of bin juice bums. So I'm going to go B minus for the Rebels.
Yeah, I was going to go B simply because I'm going to base this on where I thought they were at and how much progress they've made. So your point about are they going to win the competition? Absolutely not. But I don't think any Aussie team is going to win the competition if I had to put money on it. So in terms of the progress, I think, and what my expectation is for the Rebels, I totally agree with everything you said. They're definitely a B, maybe even higher. You know, yes, the draw has been kind to them. If you look about the teams that they played, and they played the majority of their games at home. So the next part of the journey will be maybe a greater indicator of where their true ability lies. But the fact is they've unearthed some good talent in the way that they're trying to play. You know, as you said, Carter Gordon, Kellaway at the backs, Canamp. You look at the forwards, they've got, when they win the battle up front, it really has allowed Carter Gordon to play flat and to run and to look like a really stylish 10. It's not the Wallaby 10, in my opinion, but the Rebels have definitely exceeded my expectations. So they've had a high level of performance, if you use that term, for a B grade, a high level of performance so far this season for me.
Jim, you happy with their B grading of the Rebels?
Yeah, look, if the expectations were pretty low coming into it, right, given the announcement at the start of the year, like the fact that they've been able to pull out 5 wins thus far out of and lost only 4, you got to go with a B, given the squad that you see. The consistency, winning 3 in a row, 2 in a row that you've seen over the season, the way in which they've been able to stay motivated and beat the derby teams, like getting a number on the Tars and whatnot and being competitive here, there with the other Australian teams, they probably exceed the expectation that I had for them for sure. So I can't argue too much more either way of the B. It's definitely not an A, definitely not a C because they have been winning. It's just a shame that it was this week that we chose to do it, because that's where you kick in, like the being held to zero against a sloppy Crusaders side, is not good enough, right? That is old habits coming in for whatever reason. And for that, I'm going to C plus, you know, dropping them down.
And the challenge for the Rebels is twofold. One, like you said, Richard, their draw from here is horrendous. And I think their march down the ladder begins now, unfortunately. And then I think the other news, yes, out of the Rebels, well, I'm echoing on one of yours. I don't know if you guys are picking that up. The other news out of the Rebels is Dan Herbert's comments last week. I don't know if you guys saw them on another rugby podcast. It sounded about as clear as you can sound that we have no interest in keeping the Rebels afloat. And then if you read the other report that the private business have put forward their ideas, the ARU and ARU refuses to meet them, refuses to engage with them.
It's written in the wind.
the subtext appears to be from this lowly punter that the AIU, running at a $9.2 million deficit this year, realised that managing another high-performance team, coaches, staff, players, flights, physios, blah, 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 is not sustainable financially. I'm just putting together the pieces. You would feel like if the Rebels were going to stay around, they wouldn't even be hinting at this. Wouldn't you think? Like, the professionalism would mean they shut the fuck up until they've got the deal sorted to get the Rebels back. But the fact that they're pissing around sounds like the Rebels are gone, right?
Yeah, that's my read on it. Even today when they had that meeting and they're after a date and a timeline and no one committing to it or anything else. They're just merely speaking in terms of how much it's sucking from the financials this year. It just doesn't make sense in any world for the Rebels to stay, given the time that they've had and what they've been able to turn out, just in terms of revenue, not necessarily on pitch performance, but mate, the numbers just don't make it out to Amy Park. Not that they're making it out to any grounds, as a matter of fact, but
they're many codes.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
All right, next team. Who are we doing next?
Well, I think let's go straight to the Tars, which is the next team down that we're up there this week. I'm going to put it straight out there. Maybe I'm going all in my head, all my heart in the head. They have to be a degrade for me. We're looking at a basic progress with the team that they have. I never expected them to be up in the top four or something like that. And I understand that the counter argument to this is ultimately, well, they've been close games all the time. And I understand that their argument will be, it's nice to see Will Harrison come back. And I understand that there's been moments in games where the tight five has performed well, or the backs have looked quite electric. I'm sorry, it's about results. And when you are second bottom of the table and you've only won one home game, I'm sorry, but that is not good enough for a franchise that is in many people's views, the heart or the heartland of rugby within this country. And I understand the fact is that they've had close games and all the other things I've mentioned, but to me, it's a degrade. They have to be better than second bottom of the competition at this moment in time.
I will throw one defense for them, and then I will largely just support everything you've said, is 9 front row, season ending front row injuries, a squad of 36. Okay. They have blokes that weren't even in the squad now injured for the season. I think it's as simple as, if your front row is dominant, that's great. If your front row has parity, you can certainly still win the game. If your front row is getting losing, you're in trouble. If your front row is getting pumped, it's almost inevitable you're going to lose the game. And the Tars, I'd say, have probably survived better than they should have with the front row stocks that they have. Heaven is one of my absolute favorite players now. But they are below grade level front rowers playing against internationals. And it's probably more common about 5 clubs and the front row talents in Australia and how stretched they are. But it's also a comment about the strength and conditioning program at the Tars to have so many injuries to the same position. But I think if the Tars had Bell, had Parecki, every minute of every game, it would be a very different season. But they haven't. And so it can't be any more than a D minus. It's pretty bad. And I think the other worrying thing for the Tars is you're going into next season, you're losing Hannigan, you're losing Swinton, probably the best two forwards, you're losing Parise, you're losing Noongar Tuaase. 4 of their best players. Noongar Tuaase had his best game on the weekend. I thought he was great.
Finally showed up.
4, and that's off the top of my head. I'm sure it's worse than that in terms of players leaving the club.
Swinton as well.
It's D minus. We don't know who the coach is next year, and there's a stack of players leaving. Whereas there was optimism 12 months ago that's turned into, God, I hope we can turn them into a middling team. Whereas I think once upon a time it was, I hope we can turn them into title contenders. I don't think there's any illusions that a Soli or a Kellaway are going to make that happen.
I think Suali is going to take time to adjust back to that style. Look, just to counter what you said, there was a string of games that the Tars lost by minimal points. I find in those games, they sort of beat themselves, to be honest. They play such a fast tempo attacking game that works for them. Like, they're still managing to score over 20 points a game, but it's their defense that's just horrific. They'll score and then completely capitulate and then concede. And then they're just not in a position to ever come back from that. And the whole front row and whatnot absolutely plays into it. We saw that on the weekend. We've seen that rear its head when they've been on the front foot, and that sways momentum. But yeah, look, the Tars are a team that every single year should be better than they have been. It was this time last year, man, when they were winning down in Leichhardt, and we're all swinging off Darren Coleman's cherries about how good he's been and what a down-to-earth man motivator he is, and how that's a strategy that's working for those guys. And Tane, Donaldson, Harris, all these big names coming up. How good's this bloke? How good's this bloke? And their ceiling has come down on them.
That's 2 years ago. So last year they played at Allianz all that season. That's 2 years ago, actually, what it was. So it's actually that long ago. Like, I feel like you've got to make a difference. And it irritates me. You're right, even with the kickoff receipts or the kickoff chases. Like, that's something. It irritates me. You score some points and then you just drop the ball, or there's a poor exit choice, or what, or you try to go. Like, it's just basic things which irritates me. And that's just as I said.
Front row stocks can't be understated, though. You know, genuinely obscene, the injuries that they've had.
No one's immune from them, but like Alalatoa just came back too. No team is immune from.
Yeah, but it wasn't Alalatoa, Slipper, Shoup, Pollard, all at the same time.
I agree. And look, it's probably just me being hyperbolic, just because it's a team that I want to see do well, and they're not. They're underperforming. But it's also like my football team, and the fact is they seem to be able to score points, but they can't keep them out. They can't stop there. It's like a flow. They're porous of points every week, and it's just something they need to work on. But what is pleasing is the Brumbies, and I think they've had an interesting year, because they've actually really tried to change the way that they've played this year. I think it's definitely gone less of a focus on set piece at times. They've tried to be more expansive. I've tried to be less predictable. Not that there was anything wrong with that. They always performed at a very high level. But be interested to know, as the ardent Brumbies fans in here, particularly, well, go to you first, Jim, where do you see the progress made for the Brumbies this year?
Well, what was my expectation? My expectation was for them to come and be the top performing Australian team in the comp. Have they done that? Yeah, absolutely. Have they been a perfect out and out team every single week? No, they haven't been. But we have seen player development. We have seen Lolasio turn into one of the better fly halves in the nation. We have seen the emergence of Tua at 12, who is showing outstanding skill. O'Toole has come off. These are just the backs. Tua O'Toole's come into himself and playing some great rugby. And we've seen Tom Wright be more diamonds than rocks, which is all we ask for here at the Rugby Report Card. But so in that sense, like, I'm not going to throw an A their way, because they've had some humiliating defeats themselves. So I'm going to go B+ for them. They're definitely going to be the highest rank, highest grade that I'm going to hand out. But, you know, there's much left to be admired for.
I think you've mentioned the backs as well. Before I throw to you, Blake, I think it's also to talk about some of the forwards as well, the unearthing of the talent. I know there was an article this week about Charlie Gale. Potentially being a Waratah, and he's now signed on at the Brumbies again. A breakout year for him, you know, trying to cover up the gap that Pete Sabu was left behind, you know, and trying to sort out that connection between whether it's Tom Hooper playing second row or six or wherever. I think it's been a good progress for those forwards. Still need to work on set piece a little bit, but how do you think they've done, Blake?
The two embarrassing losses make it so hard to grade them, because it's the inconsistency. And when they've been in one of those games, they haven't. They've looked terrible. And you're just thinking, who are these guys? But they're coming off an incredible win on the weekend. They've knocked off the top of the table Hurricanes. I will say Kane, back end of a tour, looked tired. Brumbies looked right up for it and put on an incredible performance. I'm coming off a high, and there's so much I like about them, and it builds off what you boys said. I mean, Kale, how exciting. Like, it's just how exciting to have a number eight like that still has 20 kilos to add to his frame. And what a beast he will be. Tua in the centres, obviously he's not a Wallaby candidate, but he'd be up there with the form Australian Super Rugby player. And then O'Toole, as Jim likes to call him, has just built off last season, which is a ripper. The halves, Lonergan.
He's got weight to carry too. Extra weight to put.
Absolutely. Lonergan and Lolasio.
A couple of O's there.
Trades into the Wallaby halves. I think Lonergan in particular has had a really, really impressive season. And is probably now the front runner for nine, which is a huge comment on them. And then the big two, which is right at fullback, has had an insane. If you didn't know how shit he has been historically for the Wallabies, Tom Wright, he would be your first pick. He has been incredible for the Brumbies this year. He's barely put a single foot wrong. But it's that you just know that those Rocks games are in him. Hopefully he's maturing. And then the big
he can't be anywhere near the gold, right?
Valentini
or the gold. He's cooked him up.
I think Valentini, arguably the best player in Australian rugby, has delivered on what he delivers. His ball carrying every game, every minute, every battle, he wins them. So there's just so much to like about this Brumbies team. And I also like that the game has evolved this year. They seem to have a bit more to them rather than just the set piece. I can see the evolution there. So I want to go an A, but those two horrific didn't bother to show up losses. It has to knock it down to a B+. So it's a long-winded way of agreeing.
Yeah, I think the thing is with the Brumbies, it's they are the one franchise out of the Australian franchises that probably are in the best position to make a deep run, and particularly in Canberra, if they are to finish, win a game on the road and then even get a home game at some point. I think they're the ones that could put the cat amongst the pigeons. So hopefully they do, because we want to see a bit of a change. But what doesn't seem to be a bit of a change, what doesn't seem to change, is where the Force sit. In regards to their position on the ladder. So it's interesting. I'm interested to see where you believe they should be, because if we look at expectation, my expectation for them, and I'm sorry, Force fans out there, is pretty much where they sit at the moment. There's been some highlights along the way in regards to, it's been nice to see Nick White obviously play in a Force jersey. There's been Donaldson, who's done well in that jersey. There's been Tizana, who's made good progress. But I think ultimately they're doing what they need, what I expected them to do. They're a C grade. They're making sound progress. They're doing okay. They're doing no better than what I thought they were. They're not doing anything worse. They're just plodding along. And that seems being really disrespectful, because I just didn't expect anything else. Thoughts, boys?
On performance, I'm with you, Richard. They what is it? Two wins at home. And they're both a bit of a surprise, to be fair, but pretty good. So on performance, yeah, shit house. It's a D. It's the same as the Tars. You can't just win two games and call it a season. Mm. It's no good. But there's something about this Force team, whereas the Tars, I'm looking forward at misery in terms of players leaving, coaches leaving. Well, how are they going to turn this around? I look at the Force and I get a feeling of excitement in terms of their recruiting in. You just feel like these guys just need one or two seasons together, and they might be able to build something. So in terms of performance, it's a D. In terms of excitement and sort of optimism, I might be like a B minus. So I'm going to give them a C
minus. B minus.
I'm excited about the Force, but no, they're not delivering. They are improving. So I'll put them as a C minus for me.
And definitely, I think just a build idea, I definitely agree that they should have a higher grade than the Waratahs are, just purely based on expectation and purely based on watchability at times and even opportunity to grow. You're right. Tars are going in one direction, it seems, at the moment, and that's not in the positive way. We extrapolate that out, the Tars are getting worse. The Force could be able to get better. So that's positive signs for the Force. Jim, what would you say? Where are you at? C, D,
well,
D?
One of the rubrics is, what have they offered? What have they offered the Aussie rugby fan this season? They've offered more than the Tars have in terms of thrill. And what if, like, the dominating performances that they've had where they've won, like, we came on here eyes wide open thinking, what is possible with this squad? Yeah. And then you get shit like, fucking 6 points on the weekend just gone. And my expectation with the Force would be really, really poor. So I'm going to go high C here for them as well. Look, you guys have mostly touched on all those, but can I just, like, for the point of it, I know we got the Reds to go, but just a slight change in direction here. You're a quality player on the Rebels. What's more appealing to you right now, joining the Force squad or the TAR squad?
Were you paying or not? If it's a Twiggy coin, if it's a Twiggy coin, mate, I will be watching the sunset. If things are equal, I'll be watching the sun rise because the TARs still has that little bit of prestige. Oh, that's going to piss everyone else off listening, but they're in.
There is. There's a sense of entitlement that comes with donning the blue. And that's why
both blue. The sky blue.
The sky blue. Yeah, but that's what's always pissed me off.
I think the thing is, you're absolutely right. I think if everything is equal, sorry, you picked the Waratahs, okay? There is an arrogance about an elite player. If you're going to the Waratahs, you have a belief in yourself that you're going to be one of the players that's going to take this team back to the promised land and to make them. And you if you have that true belief in yourself to succeed and to take the TARs back to that level at the Waratahs will give you more status, will be able to open up more contracts externally, will be able to give you a better Wallaby chance if that's what you're going. Sorry,
of course, yeah.
Then if you go to the Western Force. I'm sorry to say that.
All right, and lucky last, the Reds, eh?
Yeah, where do you think they are at, Blake? Because they have that topsy-turvy year. I think we've had them as an A points, probably unspoken, to say that Les Kiss has made a huge difference. And then suddenly we've probably had them down as a D going, I'm putting our hair up. Where are you at?
Including the Junkyard Dog in our equation, yes or no?
Absolutely.
Because if the big dog's got to eat, they're an A+, baby.
What's this Junkyard Dog thing? Have I missed it? What is it?
There's an under-20s kid, isn't he? Out on the wing, scored a hat-trick at the week.
Mate, Ryan, he weighs 40 kilos, ringing wet. Just came on, and the commentary, I don't know who led on, but it's fantastic that they did, that he's called the Junkyard Dog.
I know it to be an American professional wrestler. I know the Junkyard Dog in that you've spat it out. I've just let it slide, but I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Big Dog's got to eat, baby. He eats meat pies, and he ate three of them. He's just feasted, mate. He just had chum at the try line and went for it. And I'm in. I'm all about it. So if they've got the Junkyard Dog, how can't you give him an A? It's that simple. If we take the Junkyard Dog out of the equation, but Big Dog's got to eat, baby.
Some of the athleticism of that character, holy shit. The ins and outs, the swerving. It's probably Tokyo Drift shit.
How crazy is it? He's probably on, like, he gets a sausage sizzle after training. That's his payment. Meanwhile, Vunivalu is showing up in a brand new Audi.
Yeah.
Just delivering shit every week.
So I can Wilson lead him through the boom gates at the end of the game. Doesn't have to pay.
It's nothing through the jump over the top. Meanwhile, Vunivalu driver picks him up.
Yeah, 1.8 to drop it over the line.
Literally win the game if that guy just placed the ball. But in all seriousness, Vunivalu is playing a lot better. He's improved the last two or three weeks. I mean, there's not much we're going to say here that other people wouldn't agree with the Reds, which is it's an exciting squad. I think we've seen they stagnated under Thorn, and there seems to be a real evolution under Kiss. I think the fact that their front row turns up most weeks is an improvement. Their back row is really exciting, even though they had that little lull. Liner at 10 is very exciting, but he doesn't have the firepower of some of the other 10s. Paisami's had his season, probably the most exciting thing. But, you know, when you put it all into the call, I think they have probably also underperformed from what I might have hoped. But I would say my excitement levels, they're the most box office of all the Australian teams to watch because you just don't know what red turning up. And there's a lot of young individuals that I like watching. So I don't know. I'm really enjoying their season. I'm enjoying their journey. I'm enjoying Kiss's response to the team's work in a minute. What are you really seeing? I'll probably get them in that beat report.
Yeah, go on, Jim.
Yeah, Matt.
I think for me, that go back to where my expectation was. I really wasn't sure what the Reds were going to perform like this year. Were they going to be a middle of the road? Because I didn't know enough about Les Kiss, if I'm honest, moving forward. I didn't know where they were going to end up. So the fact that they're actually sitting in a position right now where they beat the Chiefs at home, they've put some good performances. By all accounts, they should have beaten the Blues. Obviously, this week they won four games. Going to make a playoff push. I think we have to probably go to that high C, low B range, because ultimately they've had their lows, but I think they've had more highs than lows. So therefore, I think B minus is probably where the range is.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd try as a B minus, absolutely. I think the takeaway from the game that we saw too,
just goes
to cover the lot, is like
your audio. What's going on?
Yeah. Horrific. You sound worse than usual.
Now you sound like you're in a giant hall.
Am I still in a hall?
Yeah, it's an empty one too, mate.
Are you guys carrying on? I don't know what's going on.
you're echoing. Bit of reverb.
Yeah.
Probably just Quade, thumbs up me.
It's because Quade Cooper's in the background. It's his presence that's just. No, anyway.
Carry on.
Okay. I think looking at the season as a whole, I think as much as we've been giving out those grades, I think we need to Blake's point at the beginning. Like, it's been a good season. The product that Super Rugby has been much better this year. And just because the teams have been in it, the games have been more competitive. And I think whether you've got a B or a D today, I think it is about looking at the competition. And if we were to grade the competition, it's definitely up there being an A or a B competition this year, because it is more watchable. It is more in the product is better because of the closeness of the games, the higher point scoring, the quickness of the game. So as a whole, I think it's been a good competition as we're 2/3 of the way through, Blake.
It's a ripper, mate. Honestly, it's as good as Super Rugby's been, certainly since COVID. Games competitive, games are exciting. I think Stan puts together a fantastic package that makes it very watchable. I don't think anyone outside of rugby fans are watching it, but I think those that are engaging with it, it's ripping. It is captivating footy. There are stories on and off the field, most of which are positive. It's a good year to be a fan. There was a sense of inevitableness of the last couple of years and the fight back of Australian rugby this year. Some of the promising young talent, some of the other talent solidifying itself as serious, gives you optimism, gives you excitement, makes you want to tune back in. So I'm frothing.
The other thing.
You're back?
The other thing that we're getting this year. Am I all right?
But talk anyway. We'll just talk. Be succinct.
The other thing this year that you're getting that you weren't really getting last year is a sense of excitement with the kids coming through. Like, we've come on here multiple weeks and talked about Lancaster. We talked about Double O Cool. We've talked about the Junkyard Dog now. Like, there's genuine prospects coming through that are very, very exciting and are offering that at the Super Rugby level, which is where they're at right now. Right, so we can enjoy that. Years Born was always just... We had no sense of what was coming, what's coming through. It was nice to see these kids come together and actually string some awesome rugby together. And you could throw Donaldson into that too.
Absolutely. Hey, I've got a question for you guys then. If we rated our team, we said the competition's ripping. A few just other little bits and bobs of rugby news this week. Finau's hit in the Waratahs game. Obviously, this was the talk of the town in the social media world. Of world rugby. He's obviously now done it to 3 Australian fly halves, and he's never once been penalised for it. And, you know, I'd argue the liner one was pretty bloody blatant. What were your thoughts on this one? What were your thoughts on the line Finau plays the game at? I don't know, any takeaways? I could start it off, which is just I park my views for a second. It's the hypocrisy that blows my mind. Like, just how much we fucking love a card when someone like taps the ball down by accident, or someone's hand goes somewhere near someone's face. They'll fucking end an international game and send 3 blokes off. No one's hurt. No harm, no foul. It was an accident. The way we carry on, and then here's like 3 attempted murders, no penalty, no card, play on, and then no HIA. Just come on, get up. It's part of being a tough young fly half. Like, just the hypocrisy of we're doing it to save the game. No, we're doing it because you like being really objective in your decision making process. If we're fair dinkum about safety, it is these hits are the problem, not that shit.
And I feel the rules and the laws, whatever you want to call them, aren't making much sense to me if your actual concern is head knocks and spinal injuries. There's a real hypocrisy there. Then my personal view is, fuck it, it's in the rules, good it. Ref doesn't pull it up, good on you. He's got away with it so far. If I was his coach, I wouldn't mind him dialing it back 10% so he doesn't give away a card in an important game. But yeah, whack the fly off. That's your job, isn't it? Thoughts?
Yeah, I think to your point, I think it's harder. We've got to compartmentalize them or break them into two separate things, just like you've done. If we take in isolation, this week, he made an attempt to be able to wrap. He was still high, but he was just low enough.
Just.
That it was just, but if so that were just, absolutely. So it was a legal hit within this. Now, to your point, I think there needs to be, it was clear that now whether it was the tackle or whether it was the result of Edmund hitting his head on the ground as a result of the tackle, you know, which is obviously, yes, he's come at that angle, which increases the likelihood of hitting his head. But in terms of the whiplash or the momentum or whatever velocity that's got, you know, not velocity, the hit that's gone into the head, we don't know whether it is the tackle or whether it's the hit on the ground. If we believe that it is a high level of concern, he absolutely has to go off and get a HIA check. And if he comes back on again, absolutely comes back on, have a concussion substitution, which I'm sure some people are abused. But if our mantra and our thing is that we are looking after the player welfare, yes, the hit's fine, but we need to look after Tane Edmed and be like, yep, let's take him off for a check and then he can go back on afterwards. I think that's really important. If I was a coach of Finau, I think it's a constant messaging that he needs to go lower. He's putting the team, he's putting his need to make a big hit before the needs of the team. And I think that's before even you get into welfare, because if he is a smidgen higher, he's basically going to be sent off. He's going to the, and he's putting his team under pressure for 20 minutes. Okay. So I think it's, and even if we're in an international stage, if he gets to that level, it's for the entire game, depending on the type of competition. So my messaging would be, yeah, great, but let's dial it back a little bit. You know, and make sure that we actually become legal, bend at the waist and actually not give the referee an opportunity to send you, because ultimately playing with 15 men is a lot easier than playing with 14 men. But you know, second point about the hypocrisy. Yeah, absolutely. It's the difference between that hit and someone who's trying to clear out or there's an accidental, it's chalk and cheese. But this one I felt was okay, but there does need to be a consistent approach, but it's so subjective.
Whenever an old school approach, rugby, no official spoken to them, game on, mate. All the 10s that are leading these franchises, these super rugby teams in Australia, what are they, 20 years old? All of them, every single game should be started with a late hit from a very big shoulder. That's what I would be doing. It's what I'll be telling a player to do, because that rattles the bloke. Absolutely rattles him. And then
I tell you what, from someone who used to play fly half, the hit rattled me so much. Every time Edmed or Will Harrison caught the ball for the rest of the game, I went like, just pass it. What do you think? Yeah. Like I just would not have been taken to the line ever again. I just would have been shoveling shit all day. Like it made me, it's amazing that one hit like that, it does work. Like it does. Yes. If you're a cat like me, it does. It puts you off your game.
I think it's something to be mindful of, and look, it'd be interesting to see how it moves forward. But a greater discussion again about player welfare. It's not just about contact with the head; it's about HIA checks, making sure that the sensor, the gum shield sensor, is set to an appropriate level that the player can obviously get checked afterwards. I hate time off, because we know delayed concussion is a massive thing. So
just before we move on, Richard, because even if the frequency in which we see yellow cards and how good teams are playing with 14 men these days, like it's unbelievable how much they've minimized, how much of a disadvantage it is. It's almost worth it when you're playing against a young 10 to see where the line is early and play to that line. Because if you stay underneath the elbow, underneath the shoulder rather, you're not going to get yellowed for it. You get a penalty and spoken to, but the damage is done. You'll wear it.
And even, and that goes in for the argument of getting rid of the 20-minute red card, because you're absolutely right. You can defend for 20 minutes for 14 men. You can kill the clock. You can, which goes to Blake's point before about, you know, we should be stopping clocks, which I agree with. It's scrum time. You know, I love scrummaging, but we need to stop the clock so we don't waste time. Because if you're going to smack the 10 and then, you know, it's made a difference, well, 20 minutes is nothing. Because you're right. We learn how to defend with 14 men. So maybe there needs to be a greater deterrent. But that goes to a bigger conversation about what it is and being able to determine what is intent as opposed to accident. And that's something that, again, is very subjective, so we never know. But good hit this weekend, but he does definitely need to be careful because that liner one, as you said, is not a great one. Let's do a quick roundup for next week, okay? Predictions. In one word or two, so that means 10 for you, Blake. What are we thinking for this week's game? So round, obviously, 11, so pushing into the final stanza, the final four rounds, I think it is, of the competition. Well, five rounds of the competition. So big games moving forwards. Jim, let's start off with you. Round one, Kane's Tars at Sky Stadium. Must be the cake tune down in Wellington. Kane, surely.
Surely, right? You got a Kane's returning home after a loss that they'd be fearing. And you get a Tars that haven't put a game together, haven't put a good day together in 3 years.
Blake, Kane's or Tars?
Yeah, I think it's a real bad one for the Tars. I think the Canes coming home off a loss are going to want to make an example of someone. And I think the Tars have been punching above their weight, given their front row stocks. I think this is the week they lost Ross as well on the weekend. Another prop has gone down. I think this is the weekend where whatever the line is, I'm backing the Canes by more. I've got a bad feeling about this one.
Rebels, Blues at Amy Park. Blues have obviously not going to actually have to travel as far as the Rebels, but the Blues still on tour. Big tour for the Blues, but surely you'd back the Blues down at Amy Park. Boys?
Yeah, look, the money backs the Blues for sure, but these are the types of games where we see an underdog play out of their skin. So there's a very small chance that the Rebels come on and put 20 very quick points on and manage to scrape through to the end of the 80. A Blues team that's on the road still, having worked very hard in Suncorp the week before, there's a chance. There's a chance. I'm going Rebels.
I think there is a chance for an upset. It's crazy that you picked him, but there is a chance for an upset.
But we've just seen it, mate. We've just seen it go this way, particularly this Rebel team. So anyway, take risk. End of the season. If not now, when? Fuck it.
I like your risk-taking behavior, Jim, but you're off your head. But every time I think the Rebels are done, that's when they seem to put in a good performance. They're a very tough team to have any sense of consistency or to get a read on them. So I actually think they're the one team might be staying away from punting on one way or another. And as silly as it sounds, 2 weeks on tour, it's still 2 weeks on the tour. The Blues didn't show up as good as they would have liked against the Reds. I reckon they might be even a little worse this week. They're in their lull, if I was reading it. So I don't mind so many reads there, Jim. It's the Blues. The Rebels lost to the Crusaders last week. Blues are winning.
Week.
And look, I think it'd be nice to also bring to the fore the next game is the Pacifica Highlanders. And I think what's exciting, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think I am, but this is the first game that the Pacifica have actually had in Tonga this year, which is fantastic. They've been a bit
ever?
Of a
play. Have no, they gone no, before?
This year, I think they have, but, or maybe I'm wrong. I thought they had before played a one-off game before, but maybe I'm wrong. But if this is the first game, then fantastic. They've been a bit nomadic playing in Auckland and other various venues in Australia and in New Zealand. So awesome that they get to play in Tonga, but, and I do expect them to beat the Highlanders this weekend, just for that pure fact of getting up, growing that extra leg, as Jim talked about before, getting up that game for the Pacifica. So exciting for them. Jim?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. The third sail. Highlanders are fucking shit, man. Like, there's no two ways about it when it comes to what the Highlanders are offering. And if the Pacifica want this one, it's theirs for the taking. And I'm in a risky mood, right? I'm feeling risky. I'm going Pacifica again for this one.
Okay, Blake.
I like your risk taking, mate. It's a special occasion. I mean, God, these are the two least interesting teams in the comp, isn't it? I'll tell you Pacifica because they're at home, but who cares?
Maybe the game of the round, Crusaders Reds, over in Christchurch. Obviously, not many teams go there and win. We've obviously said that before. However, I feel like the Reds have got a chance, and I feel like the Reds have gone to Christchurch before and won. They've got the wood on the Crusaders, but I think that the Reds have got a chance this week. Momentum was slowed slightly with their obviously the result this week against the Blues, but I wouldn't be shocked if the Reds go to Christchurch and get a win.
I would be pretty shocked. I don't know. I just think, I don't know, maybe last week with the Crusaders finally putting it together, they seem to have one or two blokes back, namely Scott Barris, who just added so much starch. And their front row never left. There's all black 100 test front rowers. And they just demolished the Rebels last week. Like, they ate them for breakfast. And the one thing you'd say about the Rebels is they have a good scrum. They didn't last week. And I've got question marks on the Red scrum. I think they've been quite good the last 2 weeks, but I don't know. I think the Crusaders win the scrum battle. Reds could be in some Barney rubble here. I hope I'm wrong.
Team that will be in Barney rubble surely will be the Western Force going down to
mate.
Yeah, I know, but you've been so
risky. You're
feeling so risky.
I risk too much.
I just think the Reds play with fucking butter on their hands, man. They can't hold on to a lead. So even if they do put themselves in a position, gone Crusaders by 10 plus.
Thanks, all. Chiefs by 15 plus, surely, against the Force down in Waikato, surely.
Yeah. You just hope the Force make it a dogfight.
Really, that's a question for me.
Chiefs is 40, 50 minutes, but they're in trouble.
Also, the Brumbies draw, surely it'll be a 15-plus win for the Brumbies too. It'll be a good opportunity for potential to see some other players in their outer positions, keep the core positions, combinations the same, but maybe
they've done that pretty well anyway, I reckon, the Brumbies. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no one on their bench that you're like, I don't know that bloke. Like, they get minutes. They get game time. I thought Ikitau and Alatoa Bucks look good. They'll look better for the run. So I'm keen to see them get some more minutes. It's got the feel of a banana peel game. After the big win last week against the Hurricanes, like, the Brumbies could slip up here. But you would have to think they will just build off last week, show some consistency and put the Drua away. I'm not that confident, but God, I hope that is the result. So I'm on the Brumbies.
They're awesome. But there are predictions for this week. It's been a bit of a long one, given obviously our grades this week, but I'm excited about round 11, some good games, obviously moving forward. And thanks to obviously everyone for jumping on and following us obviously on our Spotify. Obviously we're very respectful and very appreciative of all the support Green and Gold have given us over the years, as we said last week. But if you could chuck us a follow on Instagram, Twitter, and obviously follow us on our new Spotify link or through the iChans link to our specific page, we'd really appreciate it. And thanks for all the support that you are. And obviously tell us, we have no idea. Give us some feedback on either platform. We love engaging, obviously, with all the comments. So thanks for everything.
Just typically, if it's positive feedback, put it on Spotify with the old 5-star rating.
That'd be great.
So people find us. And it's a clouded market. When we started this years ago, it was just the three of us. It was the rugby podcast world and the previous Green and Gold podcast. There wasn't much about. So if you are still listening to us, we love you.
How many day oneers are out there?
Yeah, how many day oneers are out there? And how do we know? You've got to send us a reference that only day oneers would get.
And by the way, just for the record, if you're still listening after the terrible audio from one of us, kudos to you as well. Definitely. But thanks, guys, for everything you do. We do it for obviously creating this content for you guys. So have a great week, and we'll catch up next week.
Cheers.
Thanks.